And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonableist Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me on the line, big, big night for him. Was not selected, but will surely be one of the top names on the undrafted free agent market. Eric Green, what's up, buddy?
I was draft eligible in 2007. I got that DeAndre Hewlett thing going on, except my draft rights aren't owned. But I got my coffee. And so draft night's fun. It's always fun. And it was fun last night.
It was.
From a Raptors perspective. They made their picks, and that's cool. But just, you know, seeing the jockeying around the league, it was a fun night.
Yeah, I love the draft process, and I appreciated having a lot more time with it this time around. And, you know, anyone who reads our work on the written side of The Athletic knows that on Tuesday I released my Raptors big board. So just to give some background on my relationship with the draft, so when I was at the Score for the 2014 and 2015 NBA drafts, I was our draft lead.
So that was the Wiggins and the Towns draft?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Because 2013 was the Bennett draft.
Yes, that makes sense.
Not the Giannis draft, the Bennett draft.
Yes, correct. It was the Bruno draft and the DeLon Wright draft, as they are in my head.
Yeah.
Actually, I guess for me it was more of the Norm draft, because I was a very big Norm fan at UCLA. So anyway, I was our draft lead at the Score for those 2 years. And then in the years since the Raptors, you know, 2016, my first year freelancing and doing the Raptors Republic thing full time, they had 9 and 27. So they made a bajillion picks. So there was a 3 year stretch there where the draft was such a huge part of my job covering either the league or the team. And then the last couple years, it's been way more boring, where like they took OG Anunoby, which was awesome, and he wasn't like OG Anunoby almost changed the way I lay out the tiers, where Eric, I don't know if you looked at my tiers, but I had the tier
of,
like,
actually when you asked me to read something, I almost always do read it.
I had the top tier of, like, probably not gonna be there, but guys, and in other years, like, I probably wouldn't even have done that, but then OG Anunoby slid, and I was ill-prepared other than, oh my god, this is amazing.
So was that your fringe, the equivalent to your fringe tier this year, or was that one tier higher?
Yeah, it would have been fringe tier, because I think OG, you know, he was getting mocked some in the lottery, but there were obviously the injury question marks. But I don't think anyone thought he was gonna slip as far as.
Well, yeah, he had the injury thing, and then he played at the intra-squad scrimmage, which I think shocked everybody. I can't even remember where training camp was that year now.
I believe it was in Burnaby. Yeah. Rest in peace, the 40th
Yeah, the
center.
Closing 40th center, which I think Alex McKechnie has some investment in, so it might be time to try and get Alex re-signed through next beyond this season on a maybe below market deal, since he's looking for financial security.
What are we doing here with anti-labor takes right out of the gate?
We're going to be talking about how Fred Van Vliet's market is cratering all of a sudden
pocket of MLSE Eric Green.
I wish.
I suppose you think Masai should take a discount as well, right?
Yeah, where's his loyalty?
Yeah. Okay, anyway,
guys,
that
was all a joke. Let's go on.
The 40th thing is real, though, because they're not doing this because of the pandemic and the delayed start. But normally a part of the Raptors summer kind of incubator program is that those players will spend some time in Toronto. They'll spend some time in Vegas out at Summer League. They'll spend some time in LA, and, you know, everyone will be like, oh my God, the Rico Hines runs, which, yes, absolutely. Paul Watson on the radar from the Rico Hines run. So let's go. And then they'd also usually, some of the newer guys would spend some time in Burnaby with McKechnie's group, you know, doing some baseline stuff and some testing and basically, like, you know, I think setting up the guys for the rest of the offseason in terms of, like, what do you need to work on? You know, hey, your hip mobility is not great and that limits your ability to scamper around screens on the perimeter. You know, here's what we can do to work on that, that kind of stuff. McKechnie's still under contract, so it's not lost entirely, but a part of that kind of rotating, I guess, semesters of the player development offseason will maybe take place somewhere else now.
I don't know. And, like, it is, for their purposes, a great training camp setup, and I'm sure pre-training camp in the type of workouts or training that you're talking about, because they do have, like, rooms there where you can hang out for the day and rest, and it's sort of like a little dorm feel upstairs, attached to a, you know, definitely a world-class facility. So, I mean, sucks for the people who use it regularly, first and foremost, and the people who work there. But a bit of a blow to the Raptors, but they will find a way, I'm confident.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. So anyway, all of that draft backstory is just to say that I love the draft and the draft process. And, oh, Kelly Olynyk just exercised his $13.6 million player option. Shocker.
Mazel tov.
More BC talk early in the podcast before we actually
raised,
get to the process.
Raised in Toronto and then moving to BC.
I will say, though, we obviously don't know much about what the Olympic qualifying tournaments and Olympic process is going to look like next year. But if you are someone projecting Canada's roster in a, say, vaccinated environment, Kelly Olynyk now being a free agent next summer instead of this summer is not the best thing for his chances of suiting up for Canada. But,
or theoretically, him playing for the Heat as opposed to a worse team, making it so he might still be playing deep into June and July. But,
although,
I mean,
at that salary on an expiring now, I would assume he's a trade chip at some point. But
yeah. Anyway, we'll see, but yeah. I think your take is right, but also international basketball happening.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine at this very moment.
Yeah, but so for anyone who follows Canada basketball and is curious, there is a...
I promise we'll talk about the draft at some point.
There is a FIBA Americas qualifier, like, this month in an area where COVID numbers are spiking, and the U.S. and Canada both have not made, like, any mention of having a team down there, and we have, like... FIBA hasn't made it clear, like, will those teams get disqualified entirely? Because if they do, that means Canada can't make the 2014 Olympics. Will they just be able to take
2024 Olympics?
Yes, 2024. They won't make the 2014 Olympics either, though.
Yeah, Sochi. Tough one.
Anyway, so yeah, that's... we should probably talk about the draft. All of this preamble is because I'm very excited and I was happy to have the pre-draft process back. And it's very fun to not only look at, so I make this composite big board that takes 13 or 14 other boards. And basically I average those out. And then I have a sub average of, like, the four or five people who of those, that group, I kind of trust the most or find their analysis lines up with my own the most. And that's where I create the baseline from to dive into profiles. And then the last step in the process, after doing my reading and my stats looks and my video dives and stuff like that, is to raptorize the ranking and give a guy, you know, basically try to come up with a big board that I think might be more similar to the Raptors board than the consensus board out there. Now, I do constrain myself where, like, I can't go too far outside of the range of rankings, basically because I have to bake into the process that I can't, as a full-time Raptors beat writer, I can't watch as much college basketball as a lot of the people who...
Full-time, you know, draft writers.
Exactly. So R. Sam Vecini or even John Hollinger, who gets to do more of a high-level thing. Brad Schroeder over at UpRocks, whose draft stuff I like. Crab Dribbles on Twitter, or I guess he's Illegal Screens on Twitter. Jackson Frank, a lot of guys like that. And then even, like, you know... Jacob Goldstein's PIPM rankings, Ben Pfeiffer and all the guys over at the Stepien. So yeah, anyway, I kind of constrain myself to a range because I can't, it's just not, even in a pandemic environment, like it's not feasible for me to have watched as much of these guys as those guys have. But I think I can Raptorize it a little bit. So a night like Wednesday is fun for me because the Raptors took two guys who I had much higher on a Raptorized board than on the consensus board, which feels good. It makes me think I'm on somewhat of the right track. Now, I didn't, you know, I think the Raptors probably had Malachi Flynn somewhere in their top. I don't know. I think, like, given the way they talked about him after and just how obvious a fit Flynn is, I wouldn't be surprised if the Raptors had Flynn in, like, their top, like, if you want to call it lottery, but their top 10 or 15.
I was going to say 15 is probably a safe number to use.
Yeah, and then Jalen Harris I had in the early 40s. So at 59, Flynn, by the way, I had at 22 on the Raptor board. So getting him at 29 is nice value. And then with Harris at 59, I had him in the mid-40s on my board. He was projected to go undrafted pretty much everywhere. So yeah, some nice value there as well. And I would assume with a draft this flat and the Raptors not shuffling around in the draft, like I'd assume Harris was probably inside their top 30 to 35, given how many options were still there at 59.
You know, I would have loved if they just came out and said, actually, Flynn and Harris were exactly 29th and 59th on our boards. And the league just got it right this year.
Yeah. We're really upset to have missed on Nico Mannion or Justinian Jessup. One of those names who I like a lot more than the other, by the way, even though they're both in the same spot now. Justinian Jessup. Whew, that guy can shoot it. Anyway, so the rap... Pardon?
Mr. Jessup.
Yeah. Oh, I don't like it. So the Raptors did end up with Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris. Malachi Flynn at number 29 was a very Raptorsy pick. You know, some of the other names, the highest other names on our board around that time, Desmond Bain, Xavier Tillman, Tyrell Terry, Teo, if you wanted a potential stash. I saw some people, you know, mildly disappointed. Jordan Nwora from Louisville is another guy some people seem to like. But Flynn was...
I think the lesson here is they couldn't have gone wrong from a name standpoint.
Yeah.
Just a lot of good names.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the one name that I had in the mix here, and I actually had him slightly higher than Flynn, but I had Grant Riller, Malachi Flynn, Xavier Tillman, and Desmond Bain all in the same tier on my board and were available here, to where when we were Slack chatting, I was fine with any of those four guys.
Yeah.
I probably would have leaned Tillman just given the need at center and just like selfishly from my X's and O's breakdown perspective, he is probably the smartest player in the draft. And is like the closest thing to, obviously, you know, him becoming a Marc Gasol type would be an impossibly good development outcome. But in terms of like, those reads that Gasol makes on both ends where you're like, are you watching the game on replay? How did you see that coming to be? And also just having a big ass to set some good screens.
Yeah. So naturally Canada's team, the Memphis Grizzlies, took him.
Yes. The Memphis Grizzlies, who continue to just take the highest rated player on draft Twitter, to where Cole Zwicker, who is a friend of the podcast and used to do public-facing draft ranking stuff, had to put a statement out last night that no, he is not working for the Grizzlies. So Malachi Flynn, we can get into a little bit of his scouting report. Eric, I know normally I lead the draft conversation, but when we were discussing prospects privately leading up to the draft and when you did your best possible outcome for the Raptors offseason, you kind of narrowed in on Malachi Flynn, and I think you would have, had you done a big board, it sounds like you would have had him even a little higher than I did at 22. What do you like about Flynn? Why is he an Eric Kareem player?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I didn't research the draft to the extent that you do, but
as noted by Bobby Webster.
Yeah. Well, he noted that you do a lot, not that I specifically don't do
Fair.
That much. But it was a well-deserved shout out. I hope you don't strain yourself patting yourself on the back. Yeah, I mean, like you said at the end of your Flynn column, like, he's very Raptors-y, and the notion that this is, like, a two-way player, not necessarily in just, like, the broad shoulders and, you know, in Lowry's case, big ass, the general width that Lowry and Van Vliet play with, but in terms of, like, just being able to guard your man and not being... There's so many point guards in this league who are just bad defensively, right? and the Raptors don't really have to deal with that. They've, like, you remember the feeling of having to hide CJ Miles in the 2018 series against the Pistons, which they were not able to do, but they tried to hide CJ Miles. The Raptors just haven't had to do that over the last few years. So the idea of getting another guy who, by the way, isn't just a replica of those two guys, who seems to maybe have been the top pick and roll player from a ball handler point of view in this draft. When they say he doesn't have much upside, like, the notion that you're able to execute the most commonly used play in basketball to a very high degree, like, that suggests some upside, even if it's not the sexiest thing in the world.
I think what people get bogged down with sometimes is, like, when they say upside, they're talking, okay, 100th percentile outcome. Everything breaks right. What does this player turn into? And for Malachi Flynn, that's probably, like, you know, maybe an average starting point guard, which is still an unbelievably good thing to get at number 29. And yeah, there are probably some guys in this draft who, their upside is second best player on a championship team. But the thing you also have to keep in mind with upside is, like, yeah, it's awesome that a guy has that upside, and not to be negative about a guy and a draft pick that I've defended for a long time. But, like, Bruno Caboclo had, like, Giannis upside, maybe, if everything broke exactly right. Maybe not, but maybe, like, his 110th percentile outcome or something. Yeah. A part of determining upside is also, what is the likelihood the player reaches that upside? What is the value of that player if they don't reach that upside? And I think Flynn, probably more than anyone left on the board at that point, other than maybe Desmond Bain, probably had, I think, the highest, like, the best median outcome, where it's like, okay, let's assume everyone in this draft progresses average for their skill set and their draft slot and stuff. I think Flynn was the best player on the board other than maybe Bane. And I think when you look at what the Raptors like to do at both ends of the floor, and you look at, you know, what a playoff rotation looks like. Like, I asked Dan Tolsman about this after the draft. And basically, in nicer terms, I said, you know, does the fact that you guys took two guys who can really pressure a defense and pressure the rim, one as a pick and roll guy and one as kind of a three level scorer, you know, is that a lesson learned from the fact that all season you guys couldn't do that? And he, you know, I asked it nicer, and he kind of tiptoed around it a little bit, but it certainly seems that was one of their takeaways from the playoffs, was that, yeah, we need more dynamic creation in the half court. And Flynn being an elite pick and roll player, and we'll talk about Jalen Harrison a little bit, being kind of an exciting scoring piece potentially. And I think the way to frame Flynn, you know, there are people who have some questions about his defense, which are maybe fair. You know, he's only 6'1". He's not super athletic. Maybe he struggles with the strength and athleticism moving to the NBA from the NCAA. But at the same time, he was the conference defensive player of the year. He's, like, hyper intelligent on both ends of the floor, and he tries really hard defensively. So that's, that gets you a good amount of the way, especially when you look at the team defense side rather than the one-on-one defensive side. And he also had, like, a sky high steal rate. So if you're, you know, projecting or trying to quantify what a guy's defensive instincts look like, you know, he projects well there. And I think the way to frame it is not necessarily that, you know, I don't know that Flynn's going to be Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry levels of all defense. I do think he has the same skill as them in that he's very good at digging down on post-ups, like in double teams, which will be a lot of fun to watch. But I think when you look at what a playoff rotation looks like and how Nick Nurse managed his playoff rotation and how other teams thin theirs out, deeper into the playoffs, what you're looking for is with a draft pick or in free agency or as you're developing a guy is who is the best offensive player who can actually stay on the floor with their defense in a playoff game? And I think, you know, whatever you think of Flynn's defensive upside, I think the floor is enough that he's not going to be a guy who can be played off of it. And then, you know, you've got all this playmaking. Sam Vecenie and Brian Schroeder are two guys who are really high on Flynn's shooting potential. He shot 36% on threes and pretty well on a decent volume of pull-ups. The rare time he was unguarded, he shot really well on catch and shoot opportunities. So some potential for him to be an off-ball guy in kind of those Raptors 2-point guard sets. Anyway, I'm just saying there are a lot of paths to Malachi Flynn becoming a really useful rotation player. And I think especially at 29 in the draft, and in a draft that was light on, you know, top tier talent, the focus on upside loses maybe some of the necessity of looking at likelihood of reaching different outcomes.
And I think the super big upside guy who could have been in their reign, was it Jaden McDaniels?
Yeah.
Jalen McDaniels? Like, Jayden. He went the pick before, right? Like, and it's not like he's the only guy with upside, but like, he was sort of at the polar, my understanding is he's at the polar opposite of things.
Yeah, he's a 6'10 forward with a handle who got moved to the bench as a freshman because he was so inconsistent.
Feels like Anthony Randolph.
Still anyway. A good overseas player, by the way. Bring him back.
Yeah. So I think you just can't have enough two-way players. Like, would it be better if he were 6'4 or 6'5? Sure.
Yeah, but he would have gone in the top 10 if he
was 6'5. Yeah, exactly. So you figure it out. He's insurance and also like a player who can, the Raptors obviously feel can play next to Lowry and Van Vliet. And if they've played that way enough, where I think we can pretty safely believe them. And like, he's going to fit right in. Like at 29, I don't think you want to, and as you mentioned, in this type of draft that was noted for its depth rather than its potential home runs, and there's always like, there's not always, but there's usually one or two outliers there who will shock you outside the lottery and become like tentpole players for their teams. But, you know, if you get a guy who stays in the league for a long time at that spot, you're doing well. And everything I've read, and again, the day after draft day and the day after draft day, there aren't many hammering. Like, not many picks are getting hammering.
Yeah, but everything only if you're the Celtics.
Everything I've read and everything I've heard says is basically this guy's going to be in the league for a long time. And if John Hollinger calls him a baller, like, yeah, I'm for it.
Yeah, just a baller is the Hollinger quote. Which is kind of the Raptors type. So you talked about, you know, potential surprising players at this point in the draft. So let's pivot to Jalen Harris, who the Raptors took at number 59. Again, I had him mid-40s. I saw him as high as 34. Evan Zamir, who's a general analyst, but also a draft analyst who I like, was the high watermark for him. And then the consensus, someone did a consensus NBA draft Twitter board, and they had him at 44, which is a little higher than, you know, I saw him as low as 86. He was mocked to go undrafted pretty much everywhere.
Vecenie had him in the 70s.
Yeah,
right?
and Hollinger didn't have him in his top 70 at all.
That's because they're cowards.
Yeah, I like Jalen Harris a lot. And, you know, I don't want to undersell him by saying I had him in the mid-late 40s. The quote that I wrote when I broke him down last week, there's a whole write-up there that you could check out at The Athletic, obviously. But one of a sentence I had last week was, I like Harris more than some of the wings projected to go late in the first round and think he'd be a steal on a two-way. So to get him at 59, where he's possibly on a two-way deal or possibly on one of those team-friendly second-rounders, I really like this. Harris projects as a very good three-level scorer. And what I mean by that is he can shoot the three, he can get to the rim, he has a bit of mid-range game, and then he's going to get to the free throw line, I think, especially with the way that NBA officials call contact versus NCAA ones. He's got that burst and he gets into guys' chests, and I think sometimes in college basketball, when you're the initiator of the contact, you don't get the call as often as you do in the NBA. So maybe that helps. The big thing with him is just like, he just scores. And I know that that's reductive, and I don't want to at the risk of cursing on the podcast, like, he plays like a motherfucker offensively. Like, it's just, he kind of has that will to his offensive game where even if he's not, you know, even if his handle isn't the tightest, even if he doesn't make the best reads all the time, he has enough burst and he has enough craft and he has enough kind of will to the rim to score in a lot of different ways. So, you know, I think he was underrated a little bit by the fact that he transferred and you know, spent his year at Nevada and
a
was
pair a pair of transfers picked by the Raptors.
But yeah, both guys transfer and then an older season. You know, I think one of the funniest things about Jalen Harris actually is, like, so he measured at the combine a 6'4" with a 6'7" wingspan and only 195 pounds. And you watch him play and, like, he bursts and goes into contact as if his lower half is PJ Tucker size. Like, he is very strong through his core and his lower half. And I don't want to get into the whole, like body glorification side of drafting, but in terms of, hey, will this guy be able to continue finishing in the paint at an NBA level or creating separation at the NBA level while protecting the ball? I think that strength, you know, through his core and through his lower half is really important. He can kind of absorb that contact, and the fact that he can score at multiple levels will make him tough. The big question.
Your point seems to be that he'll at least try. Like, yeah. we won't be left doubting whether he can or cannot.
Yeah, like, look, one of my favorite kind of non-prospect prospects in this draft. One of my favorite prospects to watch in this draft was Mason Jones out of Arkansas, who ended up with Houston as an undrafted free agent. And his whole thing was, like, he's 6'5", 205, and dunked one time all year. And is just, like, he's just such a bully and so strong. Well, Jalen Harris has that and also the best vertical jump in the last, like, four combines.
Yeah.
So you have a little more burst there on top of that same kind of, I'm going to get to the rim, F you, kind of mentality. Now, obviously, he went 59th, so it's not universal that he's great. And I think there are some position questions on offense. You know, Sam Vecenie has some questions about, can he play off the ball? Is he going to do enough off the ball and play well enough off the ball? Or is he going to have to, you know, try to develop into more of a combo guard, which is something Tolsman mentioned last night as well. And then defensively, Vecenie has more concerns about his defensive floor than I do. I think, you know, athletically and kind of competitiveness wise, and just looking at the way the Raptors demand things from their fringe guys, you know, he's either going to figure out the team defense side or he's not going to play. So, you know, and at 59, if he doesn't play, whatever. But I like Harris. And I think, you know, it was fun to go back this morning as I was waiting for something to get edited and, you know, watch Flynn and Harris went head to head once this year and both had huge games. So that was really cool.
Were they guarding each other?
Not much. No. So, yeah, that's I don't think either of these guys is going to be the go stop the other team's best player kind of guy. But, you know, Flynn's obviously going to project as a good team defender. I think Harris can at least get there to where that scoring in a second unit could be a nice asset. You know, might need some G League time, but we're talking about the number 59 pick.
Yeah. So I think the way you described Harris, it's a good time to get into some of the realities of the Raptors situation. Heading into offseason and heading into guys they already have on their roster. Because to me, when you're describing him, he doesn't sound dissimilar to Terrence Davis. I don't know if, I mean, I don't think you intended it like that, but, like, that seems like there's some overlap. And again, at 59, I think the Raptors' intent is to draft the best guy they have, the highest guy they have on the board. And unless it's, like, a ton of duplication, like, and you know this guy's just not going to have any room to play whatsoever, you go with the best guy on the board, and that's that. But in the year in which Norman Powell is probably your most realistic trade chip, just because he's a good player attached to the only mid-level salary you have. I'm not saying he's going to be traded. I'm just saying if the Raptors do make a trade of some significance, he's the most likely guy to be in it. And given Terrence Davis's situation, again, he's facing 7 charges related to an altercation with a woman in New York. It happened in November, correct?
Yeah.
Anyway, his guarantee date is November 29th. So that obviously comes after the beginning of free agency. So the Raptors have to decide if they're going to keep him on the roster or not. By November 29th.
They kind of do,
but also he's on a minimum contract, so if they have to waive him later.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. But Jalen Harris sounds like a guy who does, this isn't the purpose for taking him, but he slides in again as a piece who could perhaps soak up some of those minutes of either guy while saying, obviously, if you're picked 59th, you're not slated to get minutes immediately. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, you can get too bogged down with, they took 2 guards.
Yeah, I got a lot of, like, they needed a center. Why didn't they take a center?
Well,
like,
it's because there weren't very many good ones at 59.
Yeah.
I probably would have taken Tillman at 29, given who was on the board. But you also, what are you going to do? You can't fault them. And like, look, what the playoffs taught us and what, you know, the last couple of years have taught us is that, you know, not to knock on centers, because the center position is obviously still very important and you need to have that size and versatility at that position. But the replacement level for center is maybe a little bit higher on the market. And like, dynamic creation in the half court is at such a premium that, you know, even if your roster was entirely guards at this point, you still need more of that skill. And you can't really fault a team for thinking that, A, we need more of the skill, and B, if we're going to bet on a developmental project, it's better to start with that rare skill and build around it than try to develop that skill. Because, I think the last couple of years have shown us, even if the Raptors player development system is very good, that kind of dynamic shot creation takes a long time to come around for guys. So,
absolutely. Now,
I will say at 59, there were some other names that I liked as potential targets. Nate Darling, who I know some people wanted as a Canadian, has signed with Charlotte, where he'll be with Jay Triano and Nathaniel Mitchell on their coaching staff. So that's fun. There were a lot of guards who were interesting, like Devin Dotson got signed. Tyshawn Alexander is still out there as of this recording. But once you go Malachi Flynn, you know, I understand it, not to undercut my own point, but I understand not going with another point guard in that spot, especially if you're confident you could bring Van Vliet back. I think they were probably going best player available, but you could certainly see where they would maybe want to go a little bit up the position chain. Couple other names out there, Lamine Janae, who is at a Cal State Northridge, and I would love to have with 905 and see what he can do. Christian Vital, at a Connecticut, who is, he shares an agent with Pascal Siakam and Paul Watson. So some familiarity there. And I don't think he's an NBA guy yet, but I think he could potentially win G League Defensive Player of the Year at the point guard position. Miles Powell, mildly interesting out of Seton Hall. Caleb Wesson is a center out of Ohio State who I think the Raptors were interested in as an undrafted guy. But the thing the Raptors are always going to run into is they like to, and summer leagues, no summer league is going to change this a bit, but the Raptors like to bring in a number of Exhibit 10 guys to compete for those final roster spots or the final two-way. And they've done that a couple years in a row now. So you see this huge run on two-way guys immediately after the draft. And then there's a little bit of a lull now, I think, while teams and agents figure out, you know, okay, how many two-way spots are left, and does an Exhibit 10 in the right situation make more sense? So there are lots of names still. Nathan Knight, Mabidi Diakate, Jake Toulson. There are some interesting names out there that the Raptors could target, as well as Canadian Kareem Main, who is not close to the NBA at this point, but could be a G League guy to get another Canadian in there. Eric, should we pivot and talk the free agency period that starts like 8 minutes after the draft ends?
Yeah, sure. I think I just want to say bravo on your job covering the draft. I learned a lot from you, from your work, and I hope our readers did too.
Well, thanks, man.
Yeah, no, I like to be earnest every so often, but yeah, usually I just want to be Eric.
I appreciate it. Ah, boo. I guess one other draft thing, I guess, before we move on, and it kind of colors free agency, is that I think this is mildly scary with how the last little bit has gone. Philadelphia had a really good day yesterday. You know, they paid some picks to get rid of Al Horford, but they landed Danny Green through all of that. They drafted well. They added a lot of shooting. Dallas had a really good day too. I thought Dallas, Philly, and Memphis were kind of the three teams that had the best day. I really like the Raptors draft too. And then if Raptors fans need any consolation, I did not like the days that Boston and the Knicks had. So the Atlantic kind of comes out as a bit of a wash there. But Philly loaded up a little bit. Obviously, Milwaukee's been trying to make moves.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Eric, heading into free agency, what's your feeling about the Raptors overall? I know you columned up about it last night.
Yeah. It's just like I sort of mentioned at the top, like, and I think I thought this would be the case heading into it just because of the realities. I mentioned Norm Powell being the most likely trade candidate and why. They just don't have like a lot of mechanisms to be in the fray as much as some of these other teams are. And I know, like, I have one, like, WhatsApp group with a bunch of big Raptors fans who I grew up with in Thornhill, Ontario, and, like, they're talking about how the league is sort of, how the East is sort of passing them, the Raptors, by. And I get that feeling, like, watching the Nets position themselves to take a run at James Harden, watching the Bucks load up and then maybe slightly unload because of the Bogdan Bogdanovic situation anyway, he looked like he's going to be a Buck, and now it looks like he's not going to be a Buck because
he's also, by the way, I just want to say it's pretty unfeasible to see a scenario where the math works and the chips work and stuff. I want the Raptors to sign and trade for him so badly now. Like, he is now my number one. I like him anyway, and when I did my free agent targets, I was like, okay, he's going to be too expensive. He's going to be out of the range. He is now at the top of my list just to mess with the Bucks.
It would have to be like a Norm sign and trade, no? Can you do that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. But he'll, I mean, I think he'll be in the 16 to 17 range. Before I go, let's stay on the route. Don't go on a tangent, Eric. They just don't have the mechanisms to be as I said, in the fray. So they're kind of boring right now. But this is what we talked about. Like, this season and last season, to be honest, seemed like they were going to be transition years for the Raptors. And then they went out and had, like, the best winning percentage in franchise history. And that made us forget that, like, yes, this was always sort of going to be the natural bridge to what's next. So in that sense, I get fans feeling like, you know, predicting them to finish second or third again in the East would be sort of insane, because right now it kind of feels like that. At the same time, if you go in with the expectations and the memories of how the Raptors got to this point in the first place, it was to keep picking good guys, it was to develop those guys, and it was to put yourself in a position to strike when you're able to, and at that point, you might not have to give up 3 first round picks and 2 pick swaps for Drew Holiday to make a guy happy. And that's not a criticism of what Milwaukee did or is doing, but I think like everybody can agree that was an overpay just based on what's out there. Like, they did that in a very specific context. So the Raptors are going to keep on valuing their assets in their own context, and they're going to keep on trying to be good. And I don't like, sure, maybe that's a bit boring, and it's not that much, you know, fun in the same way that like Philly fans are having fun or Nets fans are having fun. But, you know, they've done it before this way, and it seems like they're going to try and do it again. And the point is to just stay flexible to pivot when the league changes around you. And I think that's what they're doing. And we can get into specifics now. I think like the Van Vliet market is continuing to look a bit better for the Raptors, if you want to take it from the Pistons perspective.
The Knicks, though.
Sure.
Loom. Like, I don't say facetiously. Like, yes, the Pistons, on top of taking on salary, are absolutely maneuvering like a team that is taking a longer-term outlook, to where, as much as Van Vliet is a culture builder piece and 26 isn't old, it might not make the most sense to spend money on a guy right now. You know, Atlanta has been tied to Gordon Hayward. They've been tied to a couple other names. Now, if they get a Hayward type, maybe they're just as aggressive. You know, Bogdan has been rumored to there as well, though. So, you know, there's always potential for teams. You know, Phoenix is probably out of the running with Chris Paul. You know, Miami, short of Giannis immediately signing the Supermax and signaling that he's not interested in going elsewhere. You know, I don't think they'll carve out the space, but the Knicks,
and it seems like
Dragic
is probably heading back there, but yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. The Knicks stay the Knicks, though.
Yeah. I mean, it only takes one, and exactly. We know that, but...
maybe the Knicks don't stay the Knicks. Just coming down that Miles Powell is signing an undrafted deal with the Knicks. I like him.
Yes. I don't think that materially changes the conversation, but that I'm glad they're doing something halfway smart, maybe.
You mean after they had a bad draft night, the undrafted signing isn't swinging you on their outlook?
I tend to look at these things from a macro perspective, yes.
Shocked so, they didn't grab Malachi Flynn, since he's a CIA client, by the way.
So, I mean, that's sort of my big takeaway. Like, you know, the Bucks screwing up a potential illegal maneuver doesn't seem like the greatest thing, but they also were, you know, they sounded pretty confident about Giannis signing something this summer, or this, I gotta stop doing that, this offseason. So who knows how much that changes, if it changes anything. But I think the Raptors are in a fine position. It's just not terribly sexy, you know?
Yeah, it's not sexy. But what are you gonna do? That's look, when we laid out the Kawhi scenarios, like, you can go back to after the championship. You could really go back to when they acquired Kawhi if you really want. And if you go back and look at our analysis around that time, especially with some of the salary cap stuff and where, you know, post Marc Gasol trade, we kind of gave the warning that these 2 years would be transition years, and not transition years in the tear it down and tank, because one, they value winning too much as a culture builder and experience gainer, and just like, you know, making sure that your organization has the level of cachet to get in the conversation for guys. And two, because there wasn't going to be a path to being bad enough, and there wasn't going to be a path to salary cap flexibility to really add. So, you know, I do think the honest thing, if the signals are that he's staying in Milwaukee, you get a little more aggressive in trade as it pertains to, you know, giving up an asset that was maybe attractive as part of the Giannis package, or especially in terms of taking on salary. If, you know, Tommy Shepard keeps saying this isn't happening, but say a Bradley Beal type hit the market who has extra years on his deal. You know, Oladipo is interesting because he only has 1 year left, so you could pivot off of that if it wasn't a fit. But if a Beal type hits the market with a couple years left, you know, suddenly you can engage with that a little more freely than you could if you're holding space for Giannis or, you know, player free agent X, Kawhi Leonard, if you really want, which would be just way too hilarious. Anyway, this was always going to be a bit of a transition period for the Raptors. I don't think there's much to be negative about, short of, you know, them losing all of their free agents, and then they're really stuck in that like weird ninth seed purgatory.
Playing, baby.
So all that is to say, like, it's certainly going to be unsexy, and I understand the angst of watching the teams around you load up and, you know, feeling like the Raptors aren't doing anything or are hamstrung to do anything. But they just won a title 2 seasons ago, and this was always, if Kawhi left, there was always going to be a bit of a transition period. And now you're in a spot where you've made a couple picks you like. You have a good pick equity moving forward. You know, you're out a couple seconds, but you have all your firsts. You have good cap flexibility. You know, you could cash in some of that to sign OG to an extension, or you could hold that. You're in a pretty good spot to stay agile as opportunities arise. And I think, you know, part of that is, yeah, like if the market for Drew Holiday is 3 firsts and 2 pick swaps, maybe you're listening a little more on Kyle Lowry. That's part of being agile too, is, you know, being able to kind of turn those hips and move in each direction. But yeah, I think, you know, yeah, it's not the sexiest place in the world to be, but I don't think they're going to get bad enough. And if I'm being completely honest, I don't think they're going to get good enough to, you know, maybe they get back to the second, even third round, but I don't, if I were picking right now, I don't know if I'd pick them beyond the second round, even assuming Van Vliet's back in one of the bigs or whatever. But unsexy isn't always bad. Sometimes it's just reality, and sometimes it's necessary to get you from a very recent championship to your next contention.
Yeah, and
window.
I think, like, they're not the only team that's done this. Like,
yeah, shit ain't linear. Look at the Spurs dynasty.
Yeah, but also, like, remember how Houston was stuck on the treadmill before they got Harden, even? Like, they never tanked, and then they became the closest team to beating like a healthy Warriors team, other than the Cavs, who actually did beat them, but that was pre-Durant. I don't think we're having this conversation, but it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, you know, you're absolutely going for it or absolutely tearing it down. Like, I think all those years we talked about the, you know, the peril of being stuck on a treadmill sort of did a disservice to, like, really explaining what a treadmill was.
Yeah, and like, the Hawks are one example where they stayed committed to the exact core a little too long, and there were no real paths to adding to that.
Yeah.
But if you know, that's the important thing, is, like, you can stay on the treadmill as long as there is a visible path to getting off of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I would think, like, we're not running a Hawks podcast, but I think they probably thought at some point, like, maybe we could package Jeff Teague and Josh Smith into a star if that happens. I mean, I don't know what the hell they thought. But, yeah, like, I don't think being good is a bad thing necessarily. Because
You heard it here first. Being good is not a bad thing. It reminds me of that, I think it's a David Roth tweet. It's like a fake Trump tweet of, to me, success wasn't bad. Success was actually good. And Trump actually retweeted it.
Because here's the thing. Like, it's already worked. And that doesn't mean it's likely for it to work again. But as I always say on this podcast, no path is likely to work. Like, they're all likely to fail. It's the NBA. It's a zero-sum game if you measure it by championships. So you got to go with the route you feel comfortable with, and the Raptors have shown good reason to feel comfortable with this path. Fuck.
Yeah. You all right?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm having arguments with myself now.
Yeah, you're getting a little fired,
like,
up.
Based on one or two comments from my friend/Twitter.
Oh, yeah, there it is. I was never one who looked at success as bad. For me, success was always good. I loved it and still do. The fake Donald Trump quote from David J. Roth.
David Roth is great.
Not to get political on the podcast, but
no, we would never. Do you know where the 2024 Olympics are, by the way?
No. Do I?
No, they're in Paris. I just hope Boris Diaw is involved somehow.
Yeah, he's got to be the ambassador, or at least like the barista or something, right?
The French team chef de mission. Although that sort of sounds like too much responsibility for Boris. Yeah, it's just like the official, now I'm blanking on the name. What are the people in charge of wine at a restaurant?
Sommelier.
Yeah, the official sommelier of the 2024 Olympics.
There you go. All right, we should wrap this up. So look at what's ahead. So right after we finish
this
podcast...
Can I get one really quick question into you?
Yes, of course.
So you don't get to invent the numbers, but what numbers are you comfortable with starting salary-wise with Fred and one of Serge or Mark coming back on in terms of keeping... not only your flexibility for future seasons, but also maybe being able to add around the what they already have for this year. Like, what would you, not in an ideal world, but in a ideal realistic world, sort of what are you looking at?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if comfortable is the right word. I think I'd go as high as like 22.5 average annual value for Van Vliet. I think I probably project him to be worth just a little less than that. But when you figure in replacement level and you know, the fact that you're stuck in this weird purgatory range without him, and just, you know, it's usually better to keep an asset than let it go. So I would go to like, I don't know,
so 4 years, 90
yeah. wouldn't make me thrilled, but I wouldn't hate it. I think if you're the, like 480 is kind of the ideal, hey, offer this. I've said kind of all along, like if they offer that at 601 on Friday, you know, maybe you get him to not go so deep into bidding war, right? And then with Ibaka or Gasol, the honest answer, like this isn't very analytic, but the honest answer is if they're willing to sign a one-year deal, I don't care what you pay them because, you know,
I meant in terms of like keeping their
opportunity costs. I know, like,
open, yeah.
Yeah, but like you have... like over 40 million in flexibility before you hit the tax line. So you'd still have a chunk of the mid-level, like even if you gave Ibaka say 12 million or 14 million, still have a chunk of the mid-level kicking around, you know, to take a flyer or two. I think with Jalen Harris and with some of the undrafted names out there, even O'Shea Brissett in restricted free agency, I think maybe you want to use some of that mid-level exception to give a third year on some of these minimum contracts that you might be giving out because you can't do that. You can only go to 2 years on a standard minimum with at the mid-level. So, but I mean, you know me. I want Harry Giles. I want him. Give him to me. Chris, the wave of emotion I've been on with Chris Dunn this week where the Bulls decided not to qualify him, so he's a UFA, but then the Raptors drafted two guards.
Chris Dunn!
At last, he's on his own. Wherever he goes, it would be extremely of the last 2 years if Chris Dunn ends up on the Grizzlies. But I think they have too many. The Grizzlies just have too many players at this point, I think. Somehow it feels like they have like 20 guys.
That man.
By the way, I have no idea what his medicals are, but it looks the tea leaves suggest Jonte Porter is not going to be in Memphis next year. At least right now, it looks like anyway, he would be an interesting guy if the medicals are okay and he's willing to go get some G League reps. Anyway, I would like Harry Giles and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I'm just like unsure where the opportunity cost gets paid full.
I think like maybe 14. So what am I thinking here? Like 36 between the two of them is maybe where I get uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think it might, like, if you're trying to keep Serge from signing a, you know, 330 deal or whatever, like the full mid-level is what I'm basically saying, do you have to go higher than 14? We'll see.
I don't know. So let's assume Jalen Harris signs for the minimum. The Raptors have $91.5 million committed to 11 guys. So that leaves them with, what, 41 under the tax? So you could go to, if you wanted the full mid-level, you could go to about 32 for Ibaka and Van Vliet combined. But you could also go higher than that and just use less of the mid-level. So, yeah, I think they're in an okay spot.
Cool. I just think lots of people, once they get into free agency and once, like, if those two guys are you know, if they bring back Van Vliet in a center, they'll want to know that question. I want to know it. So that's why I asked it. I ask questions to people smarter than me. And some, in many ways, Blake, you are smarter than me.
I don't know about that.
I said I'm smarter than you in certain other ways. But, you know, this is why we're such an effective tag team.
Yes. Be a shame if one of us turned on the other one for our new tag team partner.
Yeah.
You know, I've been watching too much AEW, you know?
Yeah, Tony Khan was on Jay and Dan last night. I don't know what he was saying, but
he's probably talking about Malachi Flynn. And all right, we gotta go. This is pushing an hour now, which given that free agency starts in like 24 hours and this is probably going to be outdated, we should probably wrap it up there. Guys, just a heads up. So Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris will be introduced via Zoom later on Thursday. Keep an eye out. If you haven't checked out the real-time tab on your Athletic app, that is available to non-subscribers as well. And that's where we'll be posting some of the quotes and notes from that. I have full scouting reports on each player up at The Athletic right now. Eric has a column up on the draft. And then first thing tomorrow morning, we'll have a kind of a cap sheet update to wrap up some of what we've been talking about here, as well as, you know, some of the lower end free agent targets, like the guys a tier below Harry Giles. If you can believe that I'm going to sell you on guys a tier below that, look for that. Thank you for listening along. We will probably, I'd imagine, if free agency goes as it normally does, which is breakneck pace, we'll be back sometime early next week to discuss the landing spots of Fred VanVleet and Serge Ibaka.
It might be nice to have like 1 week to not relax, but to like have a picture of what they're doing and who they are. Yeah. Of course, then we'll be submerged with questions of where they'll play. So it's great. That's great.
Yeah. We'll know who they are, but not where they are. mini camp in LA next week, though. So things are getting rolling. Guys, thanks so much for listening. Please check out all of our work on the written side at The Athletic. And Eric, thank you, man.
Black A, thank you. See ya.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.